affected me. And well, I'm
a bloke
like,
said to me
dear.
Yesterday morning at my normal coffee hangout, he goes, daylight savings is killing me. I'm like, really? Really? You don't have a tumour, Tiger. You just got to adjust your sleeping patterns a little. But I think, you know, from a sporting point of view, this is one of the things I talk to athletes and non-athletes about a lot is I really think, and this is, I could be showing my age, but I think this is really true for young people that they totally don't get how important sleep is.
Completely.
From a health perspective, from a recovery perspective, and from a performance perspective, and I'm going to say, not just because you're here, from a mental and emotional health point of view. If you're underslept, you can't be operating optimally.
No, and it's not just young people. When you go to work and people are working really, really long hours and they're using caffeine and other ways to keep themselves awake and they're saying, you know, I hate hearing someone say, I can survive on 5 hours sleep. Well, you're functioning on 5 hours sleep, but you will pay a price for that down the track in your life if you're not already paying a fairly significant price now. So if people are thinking that they can get away with this, they are absolutely kidding themselves.
Well, there's a big difference between, I can function on 5 hours sleep and 5 hours sleep is good for me. It's like, what is optimal for me? Where is the place where, like, how much sleep do you need to be healthy?
Yep.
Like, do that. You know, and you're right with... One of the problems I think is that rather than listening to our body, we're going, oh, I'm exhausted, I really need a coffee. No, you really need sleep. You actually need the opposite of a coffee.
Yep.
You actually don't need a stimulant. What your body is telling you something. It's like I always say to people, your body is a big biofeedback system that's always sending you messages.
Mm-hmm.
See that gut spilling over your belt? That's a sign. That high blood pressure, that's a sign.
Yep.
The exhaustion, a sign. That kind of flaky thing on your head, that's
so
a sign.
True.
Like all of this stuff, your body's going, help, help. And we're going, no, I think I need a pill. No, yep. You don't.
I haven't had a coffee since November last year.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's an illness.
So
how did that happen when you gave, tell me, honest, first week, no coffee.
More the first 2 days.
Headaches.
I don't have a lot of coffee anyway. I probably maybe have two in a day.
Mm.
I quite like the process of just going out and sitting out in a cafe and having a coffee. I think that's quite nice. But first 2 days, I was a little bit fatigued. I definitely noticed mentally I struggled a little bit in the afternoon, maybe for 45 minutes.
Mm.
But to be honest, I've been fine.
Seriously, if I gave up coffee, I would not want to be around me.
Yeah.
I've been drinking coffee since I was 15. That's 37 years. Your calls, welcome right now, folks. Anything in line with this conversation or something that you want to introduce, 94299 1116. Paul on line 9, who is out on the road, is joining us. G'day, Paul.
Yeah, g'day, mate. I'm a truck driver. I don't do interstate. I do local. But I can't sleep more than 5 hours. Like, if I go to bed early, I will wake up early, and then I've woken up too early to go to work, and I don't know how to sleep longer.
Okay. So what's your routine for the half an hour before you go to bed?
TV.
Yeah. Big mistake. So what you need...
Well, you're stimulating your brain, you're stimulating your nervous system, and you're actually, what you're doing is by watching screens, you're kind of turning stuff on that you should be turning off.
Yep. And you're not controlling what comes into your brain. So we say no sleep. If you want to sleep better, the half an hour before you go to bed actually assists how quickly you fall asleep, but the depth of sleep and therefore how long you stay asleep for.
Mm.
So no TV, no computer, turn your phones off. What you need to be doing is dimming the lights, having the room as cold as you can tolerate when you go to bed as well, because if you're warm under the covers and you're breathing in warm air, you're going to dehydrate, which means your muscles are in distress, so you're not going to get quality. We need our brains and our bodies to both be ready for sleep at the same time. So you have to calm your brain down. Even if you're listening to the radio, at night before you go to bed, if there's a discussion on
unless it's SEN, because SEN's very therapeutic.
I'm not going there.
Careful, Jackie.
Even if you're listening to the radio and it's a topic that for some reason you're really interested in or it triggers something in you, then you've elevated all your brain chemicals again and you're not going to relax. So that half an hour before is what I'd control better.
And I'm going to chuck in another one for you, Paul, which is a little bit weird, but I'm weird. One of the problems with us, with a lot of what we do, whether it's food or whether it's sleep or whether it's self-management or it's relationships or emotional health, is we've kind of been taught, oh, this is how you need to do it. You need to go to bed at about 10, and if you're going to bed at about 10, you should get up at about 6 because that's about 8 hours, and that's about what you need. But it's not always true. A couple of things. One, some people will be absolutely fine on 5 or 6 hours, and for some people, 7 hours won't be enough. But your body will tell you. But there's this concept called polyphasic sleeping. And what that means is sleeping when you need to. I'm not suggesting you do this as a life practice, but I know even for me, not often, but sometimes maybe once a fortnight or something, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I can because I work from home mostly, I go, I'm going to fall asleep. I go.
So you have a little nap?
I have a little nap.
How long?
About maybe 60 minutes and I'm brand new.
Yeah, you don't want to go any longer than that that time of day.
And the next day I don't do it. I don't need it. But sometimes I don't know why, but my body will go, hey, dumbass, go have a sleep. Thanks for your call, Paul. Off the SMS for you, Jackie. Lots of questions. Let's go to the one 4 down, Jackie. Can you ask, so that would be to me, who's that from? Can you ask Jackie about her studies? I'm what's an org psych?
Organisational psychologist.
Okay, I'm an org psych, but would love to one day get involved in sport. Can you make that 30 seconds or less, that answer?
Yep. So I actually did my fourth year in organisational psych because sports are like an organisation, sports teams. So good pathway to take. You need to either get supervision by a sports psychologist, which is for 2 years because it's a specialty area.
And I see Jackie's hand going up right now. That's convenient.
Or there is a master's course that's, at the moment, there's only one at University of Queensland, but we're hoping in 2017 there'll be another one in Melbourne. So otherwise, hook in with the College of Sports Psychologists and come to some of our professional development days. You'll see it on the Australian Psychological Society website.
And Jackie's mobile number is? No?
Not right. On there.
There you go. Somebody said, talking about daylight savings, it's debilitating and throws my body clock out. I think, not sort of.
The sleep conversation should have helped you.
That's funny. Somebody were talking about caffeine, giving up caffeine. Someone said, I've done the same thing. I cut out Coke and caffeine. So I'm assuming they're saying coffee.
Was rough.
Coke and was rough. I've had friends who have had debilitating, crushing headaches for like a day or two or three and not been well for 7 to 10 days.
Have they hydrated at the same time? Because this is the other thing, is caffeine does obviously dehydrate you. So I certainly made sure that the two things I did the most, I'm always really good with my water anyway, but I was really onto that, and I made sure I got more hours outside and actually moving and exercise as much as you can.
Also, the last one for the moment. Hi, Jackie. I have an anxiety disorder. I've been to many people. Do you recommend any psychologists? I know you can't recommend a psychologist on the air, but what just in general that whole...
Well, actually, what we can do is if you go to the Australian Psychological Society website, there is Find a Psychologist section there. And if you put in the particular area you need assistance with and where you live, you can find someone within 5Ks, 10Ks, 25Ks. So they have a referral network on there. So that's the best place to go.
You know, we were talking before about how people, you know, we go, oh, I'm tired, I'm going to have a coffee, or I'm, you know, whatever, I'm going to do this or that. And so obviously we still need medicine. So I'm not saying the person with high blood pressure never needs to medicate. I'm just talking about things where we kind of self-medicate so we don't have to pay attention, you know. Why do we do that? Like, why do we do stuff that we must somewhere know deep down that this is not the answer? Like, I'm exhausted, I'm chucking in no dose, or I'm drinking 3 coffees or 3 Cokes. Why do we constantly ignore the symptoms or the signs that our body's kind of presenting?
Well, you and I had a conversation with Jackie, our producer, before the show, and I think one of the things that we said was that we are a society of instant gratification, so we want the answer and we want it quickly. I think some people actually don't know any better, and so the people around them give them that same advice. And I also think there's a lot of people that are under so much pressure and stress, either from work or family, that they don't, they're saying to themselves, I don't have the time. And I think what we try and do is we look for one big fix for a lot of stuff instead of going, you know what, just take one small step and sit with that change for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And you've got to be patient. It's like, you know, we get to this time of year where the weather's getting better or people, you know, they have to start their goal on the first of the month or the first of the year, which we'll probably talk about in other shows. Whereas if you just say, okay, for the next 2 weeks, instead of if you want to cut out coffee, let's say, and you have three or four coffees a day, cut down, if you have four, cut down to three and sit with that for a few weeks. Then when you feel more comfortable with that, then cut down to two. Or if you have coffee and you have two sugars, just take out one sugar. Like, whereas they go, no, I'm just going to get rid of it. It doesn't work. And you're allowed to have that sort of stuff. You just got to find where it fits properly.
Let's go to Nick in West Footscray, who's on line three. G'day, Nick.
Yeah, g'day, guys. How are you going?
Yeah, good, thanks.
That's all right. My background's been hospitality for 25 years, mainly running nightclubs and sort of bad sleeping patterns.
Yeah.
Last year, I gave it all away and struggled to sleep. And by some sort of measure, somebody taught me a little pattern of something, a little ritual to do before I go to sleep. And I'm just wondering, how does it work? Because it does work for me. Basically, you breathe in for 5 seconds, you hold it for 6 seconds, and you breathe out for 7 seconds.
Yeah. So
you heard of that technique that just
puts
me to sleep within 5 minutes?
Yeah. Well, I think like a lot of specifically, I'd be guessing, but I would think it has something to do with switching on your parasympathetic nervous system and just calming everything down and bringing. So when your sympathetic nervous system switched on, your fight or flight, you're up, you're thinking, you're kind of almost in that adrenalized state. But that really is just a calming thing. And you got to remember that your body is this multi-layered factory of integrated organs and mechanisms and systems, and you know, everything affects everything. So your heart rate, your blood pressure, your nervous system, your endocrine system are all tied in, and when you find a way to switch off your sympathetic nervous system and calm down, everything else seems to fall in line. And breathing, or structured breathing, or conscious breathing, which is what that is one of the best ways to do it. And so it works for you, Nick?
It does, and it's, yeah, I've even taught the kids to do it, and they fall asleep pretty easy too now. So.
Tell us the technique again, because someone for sure is listening to this saying, I want him to repeat it.
You basically breathe in for 5 seconds while you're lying down in bed.
Yep.
You hold the breath for 6 seconds, and then you're breathing out for 7 seconds.
That's good, man. Well, that's simple. Simple enough. There you go, folks. That's Nick's recommendation. He's tried it, and it's worked. Thanks for your call, mate. It's time for us to go to a break. You're listening to The Science Sport on Melbourne's Home of Sport. Lots to talk about. I'm going to tell you how I went from having hot showers to cold showers and why I did it and the features, advantages and benefits coming up next.
On 1116 SEN, The Science of Sport with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to The Science of Sport at 10:27. Tony Shibicki is coming up very soon, of course, Bathurst today. We're very excited. The Home of Sport covering all 57 hours of it.
How much are you going to listen to?
I am more partial to Bathurst than you would think. I probably won't listen to the whole 8 hours. I just see the beauty of Bathurst is you can watch the start or you can listen to Shibek's call the start, watch it with the sound off. Come back in an hour, go, okay, yep, it's been an interesting week. There's been some funny things happen. Well, there's been some potentially catastrophic things happen and a few other amusing things happen. Thank God everyone's all right-ish. Yeah, but you can come in and out all day. So, you know, and it's like, I remember as a kid growing up.
I did that with the test matches of cricket, I have to say.
You know, Peter Perfect and Kevin Bartlett and Alan Moffat and all of those superstars of the 70s and 80s. And it's, you know, it's just 2015 version right now. So I shared before, I don't know, you know when something keeps coming across your path and it's not something that I'd thought about. It's not something that, by the way, 94291116, folks, if you want to chat with us, it's not something that I'd ever intended to do. But in the last, I reckon, month, six or seven times people have said to me or spoken to me about the benefit, or I've listened to something and on that podcast has spoken about the benefit of cold therapy. So everything from, just going for a walk in the winter but not wearing many clothes so you're actually quite cold but you're moving so you're not going to die, to cryotherapy. They have cryotherapy chambers in the States. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe someone can enlighten me whether or not there's one in Melbourne. I doubt it, but someone can tell me. And I listen to a guy called Joe Rogan who has a podcast, and he's always taken these, and it's minus a million degrees and you go in for three. I don't know what it is, but it's ridiculous. He loves it. But on a really simple level, cold showers. So about a week ago, I go, I'm doing that. That's what
Why?
So yeah, exactly. So I go, I got in and my testicles raced up into my body. It was so cold. It was horrible, right? Cool. No. Well, really, I'll tell you in a minute. Yeah, good. Yep. Good question.
I hope it's got a good answer.
So I start with my normal shower, and just over the 5 minutes or so I'm in the shower, I just decrease the water temperature to cold. So I go, whatever, hot.
Is this in the morning or in the evening?
All the time, whenever I have a shower.
Okay.
So I had one before I came here, obviously, and I'll have one later. I have two a day. Right. So down. Eventually the last 60 seconds is just cold water. But by the time you get to the just cold water, you've kind of conditioned your body, so it's not such a shock.
Is that how you're supposed to do it, or is that just how you're starting
out? Well, that's how it works for me. So I think everything progressive. But here's one thing. When I have a hot shower, I get out and I'm absolutely exhausted. I feel tired and drained after a hot shower. When I have a cold shower, I feel super energetic and super sharp. I feel much better. The other thing is, what we know is that there's a big link between inflammation, cellular inflammation, and a whole bunch of bad stuff. Let's just leave it at that. And cold reduces inflammation. So, folks, if you want to have a go at, just Google benefits of cold showers. There's a whole bunch of stuff. But if you want to have a go at it, my strategy is have a 5 minute shower and just do 5 minutes at five different temperatures.
Because that's with all the water saving companies.
Is 5 minutes too long?
I think 5 minutes is a long shower, but.
Really?
I think, yeah.
There's only one person in the house, though. Is that okay?
Anyway, keep going.
Anyway, that's my plan. That's my suggestion. But the other thing.
I'm still asking why.
Well, because I think it gives me more energy. I was listening to a guy called Wim Hof, who we probably won't get a chance to talk about today. Amazing dude.
Does food not give you more energy?
No. In fact, well, yes, but not that. I'm talking about that instant I feel awesome. Sometimes when I eat food, I actually feel sluggish. Don't you? I feel tired after food sometimes.
I don't have a lot of big meals. I tend to pick a little bit more sort of and eat smaller meals through the day.
Well, I don't have big meals either, but if I eat a normal, say, I have chicken stir fry for dinner. I'm not talking about I'm having pies and Chico rolls and.
No, I'm just laughing because you're.
Just, you that's have, all I ever have.
You're okay. Very limited in your diet.
Hey, that hurts. I can still, sometimes I'll eat a healthy dinner and then I'm like, oh, I need a sleepy bite. I need sleep. I've got a couple of other
things. Do you
wear
a Snuggie?
I do. Let's go to Joe, who's on the road. G'day, Joe.
G'day, how are you going?
Yeah, good.
I'm just ringing up. I've got a young daughter who's 6 years old, and I have problems getting her to go to sleep at night. Sometimes she's up till 10 o'clock. I've tried all different things. Sometimes I let her use her iPad, and she falls asleep. Other nights, without it, she doesn't fall asleep. Any recommendations on what I could do with that?
Do you know why? Have you asked her why she doesn't want to go to bed? Or
She goes to bed, no problems, but she just doesn't fall asleep. She just says, I'm not tired. I can't fall asleep.
Well, the problem is when you keep saying that's probably it's going to self-perpetuate. So what have you tried in terms of is she in her bedroom for half an hour or so before she goes to bed doing anything, like just quietly playing without electronics?
Yes, I've tried that, just on her bed playing for dolls or whatever for at least half an hour.
Yep.
And 10 o'clock you go in there, she's still wide awake.
What's the... Is she sleeping, once she falls asleep, is she sleeping pretty solidly through the night?
Yeah, once she falls asleep, she'll sleep till until you have to wake her up. She won't wake up in the morning, so she wants to keep sleeping.
Okay, and is she eating and drinking right before she goes to bed?
She drinks, yeah, she eats well and drinks well. Yeah, she drinks a lot of water and all that. Just.
But what time is she doing that up till? So you put her into bed at what time?
8 o'clock.
Right, and so when does she stop eating and drinking?
At 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Okay, I mean, you can maybe get her to eat a little earlier and see if that makes a difference. Otherwise, have you taken her to actually see somebody? Because she might need to have some sort of sleep study or something done to have a look at what's happening through the night and how many times she's waking. And if you're doing all the normal things, I'd definitely go and get it checked out.
Okay. Thanks
for your call, Joe, and good luck with that. Another thing, back to me, only child. If you want to talk to us and get Jackie out of the conversation with a self-indulgent only child, 9429 1116. No, I'm sharing things that I think can be of value to other people. So here's another thing I did.
I love the way you actually felt like you needed to justify that.
Of course I did. So if people want to think about doing something for their eyes, will you look at me and stop looking at that?
I'm it's an only on child. Topic.
I'm listening. I don't know. I need you to look at me. I'm an only child.
God.
So, one a
high
few,
maintenance
a few,
comes to.
There's
comes
a guy
to
that
mind.
I listen to who's a weirdo called Dave Asprey, who has a podcast called Bulletproof Executive. And one of the things he does is he wears yellow tinted lenses because he thinks it helps.
Oh, look at what you've walked in with this morning.
I know, because and so I did some research because it kind of it has less stress on the eyes than wearing whatever. And yep. I look at computer screens all day, so I went and spoke to. I went and spoke to my optometrist and he went, yeah, that's true. It can be, you know. So I got some prescription yellow lenses and it makes me feel more chilled out. Makes me feel a little bit more calm, a little bit less.
Because you're putting less pressure on your brain.
Yeah.
Right.
Off the SMS, do you want to read that up the top? David in Tyabe.
Yep. So read The 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss. Tim Ferriss has done a lot of the 4-hour, 4-day sort of things.
Yep.
Ice baths can reduce body fat percentage in the same way as a swimmer burns more calories due to the thermal conductivity of water. You can achieve 70% of the benefits by applying an ice pack to the back of your neck.
Hey, Dave, thanks for sharing that. I didn't know that bit, but I'm a fan of Tim Ferriss. He actually has a show on one of the cable, or it might even be on SBS, called The Tim Ferriss Show.
Yep.
He also has a podcast, which is cool. And he was interviewing that guy called Wim Hof that we were talking about before. He's, you know, there are these real pioneers that are great at exploring performance on a range of variables, everything from sleep and communication to stress management to getting stronger, running faster, jumping higher to survival in the snow, regulating core body temperature. And he's one of those guys. He's a bit of a self-experimentation man. So any of you guys who are who are interested in self-management but also learning how to operate you, in inverted commas, better, a really interesting and intelligent thing to do is to diarize what you do.
Yep.
So if you want to figure out how your body works best in terms of, you know, fat gain or loss, in terms of sleep, in terms of energy, moods, in terms of performance, whatever variable, keep a diary. Keep a diary. Write stuff down. You know, keep a journal of, you know, when you get up, when you go to bed, how much water you drink, what training you did, what supplements you took, how you felt when you did it, and
then you're
what
gonna,
the outcome was.
Because then you respond to yourself rather than going, oh, everyone else is doing this, so I should too. And then you get disappointed if it doesn't work. But something we were talking about earlier, which I think is a really good topic, and it's on with what we've been speaking about, is that addiction to comfort.
Yeah.
Let's
talk about that after the break. Let's talk about that because that's one of the biggest barriers for people to actually learn, grow, evolve, improve is the addiction to comfort and what that can do for good and bad after this.
On 1116 SEN, The Science of Sport with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's Home of Sports. Of course, it is Bathurst Day. We're very excited. Quick little plug there. If you're a 45-year-old bloke or older and you want to be ripped and rock hard, a little bit terrifying, I run a program called The Warrior Project with a mate of mine, Gary. TheWarriorProject.com.au kicks off tomorrow night if you want to find a little bit of information out about that. The Warrior Project, or one word, .com.au. Jackie Lauder.
We were talking before the break about being addicted to comfort.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the things that a huge percentage of the population, in a variety of things, whether it be comfort in your job and too scared to move, or thinking I'm not going to be able to get another job, or, you know, you feel stuck. Comfort in our day-to-day lifestyle, that you see everyone else say, oh, if I can do it, then anyone can do it. But so many people get stuck and they're scared because, well, what if I change and it doesn't work? And it actually prevents you from moving forward. If you are doing an exercise program, if you don't change that up all the time, your body isn't going to keep getting benefits because it's not being challenged. And we know that we need to be raising our heart rate or increase your weights or change your exercises. But we get so stuck, and human beings are creatures of habit. We get so stuck in our comfort zones, but that's detrimental over a long period of time. And even, you know, things at home. When I say to some clients, tell me what your routine is in the morning. I get up, I have breakfast, then I go and have a shower and whatever. The most simple thing when I say, well, get up and have your shower and then have breakfast, and they look at you like you've just asked them to make the biggest change in the world. We don't like moving out of our comfort zone, but you and I both know, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, if you are going to progress in anything, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And there's limits. You obviously know where it becomes dangerous.
You don't run in front of a truck.
Yeah, but being comfortable with being uncomfortable helps you deal with your emotions. It helps you challenge yourself. And it also helps you learn resilience and trust yourself a lot more.
Or you get better at stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, people always, my main job in inverted commas is corporate speaking, and people come to me for advice. And the best bit of advice I can give them is, say, whenever you can speak anywhere for free in front of any group, whether it's an RSL or it's a Rotary Club or it's grade
or
six
five
kids.
Five
people at work in the lunchroom, give a presentation, because how you get good at presenting is by presenting. How you get good at public speaking is by doing that. Is it comfortable? No, initially it's uncomfortable. And so too with, like you said, there's a really basic concept in exercise science called progressive overload, and that just means that you stimulate your body in a progressive way so that it continues to adapt. If your goal is to go to the gym and keep what you've got, then maintain, then just do what you've been doing, and that's okay. There's some benefit, but
avoidance doesn't work, does it?
Well, no, 95% of people who go to the gym are there to change something, maybe 99%. So if you want something to change, and you're exactly right. I mean, and it's not about being, you know, super courageous or gung-ho or ridiculous. It's about identifying that you can only become physically or mentally or emotionally stronger as a byproduct of something happening and you dealing with or initiating the something.
Yep.
You know, so having a hard conversation is not hard after a while. It's, you know,
it's necessary to have it.
The analogy is, you walk up a great big steep hill, it's horrible. And after a little while, it's less horrible. And one day it's actually enjoyable, but the hill hasn't changed, you've changed.
Yep.
And when you change, the experience changes. Whereas a lot of people live in a mindset where they are actually determined, or they think their experience is determined by what's going on, whereas it's actually determined by themselves in the middle of what's going on, because, you know, we are the creators of our experience.
It's even changing, like, you know, something as simple as, we get into the same habit where we might make a comment about liking certain sports or hating certain sports or whatever it is. And I try and encourage as many of my athletes, and I do it too, where I like to go to things that I've never been to before. The last couple of years, I've definitely got much more into rugby.
Yeah.
Didn't grow up with it because I grew up in Melbourne. I still love the game of AFL, but I'm really enjoying that side of things. I'll go to, you know, the opera or the ballet or something like that. Even if it's just to say, look, you know what, didn't like it, or yeah, really loved it. But it's doing something a little bit different. I'm not putting myself in danger. I'm not, you know, risking my health or whatever it is. But people will stick to the same thing and think that that's going to help them progress, and it just won't.
We're creatures of comfort and habit, and we tend to do what we normally do, not necessarily what's going to produce the outcome. And, you know, we see this too when people have a set belief, and then all of a sudden some new information or research or something comes out where it might it might challenge their belief, or it might even disprove their belief.
Mm.
There are very few people who can go, oh, okay, so I was wrong. All right, well, I'll change. No,
because we perceive being wrong or making a mistake as bad, and it's not bad. It's just different.
Mm. Mm.
But if you, it does
depend
on.
It's just learning something new, isn't it?
Yeah, and you've got to be prepared, I think, to, like I said, be comfortable with being uncomfortable and not feel like that's a blight on your character because you've made an error.
One of the most amazing displays of humility and self-awareness and acknowledgement in this space is a guy called Professor Tim Noakes, who is a PhD exercise physiologist, blah, blah, blah. And he wrote a very famous book called The Law, L-O-R-E, of Running. And that was like the Bible for distance runners. And I think that came out, someone will correct me, but 70s, 80s, maybe 80s. And in that, he had a whole chapter on, you know, carb loading for events and all of this stuff around what he believed was the right way to fuel your body for optimal performance as an endurance and ultra endurance athlete. He now, in his talks, gets that book and rips out that chapter of his book.
Does
and he,
he
says, yeah, he goes, I was wrong. That's it. He goes, I was wrong.
And that's actually a really big thing to do because he's published that.
World famous.
And it's gone
famous.
So many people. Yep, I know that book. And that's a hard thing to do.
And very few people, when they realise or they believe that wow, I actually could be wrong. I was the same. I don't teach what I used to teach. I used to teach dumb stuff because in 1982, when I started working in gyms, that, you know, I used to teach people how to stretch a certain way or eat a certain way or do certain things that I now know there's better ways to do it. So when you know better, you teach better. But you've got to be able to, you know, have that humility and self-awareness and confidence to go, yeah, I don't know, but yep, I'll learn or I did it that way, but there's a better way to do it.
Well, the whole medical field and certainly psychologically for us, there's been a huge change in the landscape in the last few years. There was a book that came out about the brain that changes itself.
Yeah.
And people read it and the neuroplasticity and looking at that.
That is a great book, folks, if you want to. It's called, by Norman Doidge or something like that.
It's called The Brain That Changes Itself. And then there's a follow-up book, which I'm just about finished, which is called The Brain's Way of Healing.
Mm.
And it looks at people with long-term conditions and things that they've been able to do where it's just reprogramming your brain. And we can see through MRIs and fMRIs and that, which is an active MRI, so you can see what's going on at the time, that you can actually change it. And all this neuroscience stuff we're learning now has completely changed the way psychologically a lot of psychologists actually work.
Yeah.
So, well, and that's a huge shift to say, oh, we can change our brains.
The thing is that in the space of even the stuff that you're an expert in and I'm an expert in, you know, sports science and sports psychology and all of that stuff around it, nutrition, etc., there's way more that we don't know than we do.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, that's why I say to people, keep a diary. I said, watch your own body because, you know, everything that we do, even when we're giving advice here, and I've been giving advice for 35 years and you've been giving it for 20 years or something, it's educated guessing because there's no single solution for 10 people with what appears to be the same problem.
Yeah, I could have 10 people come in with anxiety, but the causes are different.
Mm.
They're a different person. Their support networks are different. Their lifestyle is different.
Mm.
So you might have a few of the same strategies to start with, but you're never going to get to the same outcome with all those 10 people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the thing is that anxiety is a really good example because what will stress one person won't stress another.
Yep.
And some people deal with what seems to be a massively difficult, awkward, uncomfortable, and they're fine, but then something else that seems innocuous will trigger a response in them.
Mm.
It's amazing.
No one gets a free ride. I like to say that too because a lot of people think they look at, you know, if people have money, they think they don't have any struggles. If they've got a great family, they think they don't have any struggles. No one gets a free ride. Everybody has something that they have to learn how to deal with.
Now, just another book or two to recommend. Hey, everyone, thanks for all the SMSs coming through today, by the way. We're getting lots, and if we don't answer yours or respond to yours, apologies, but they're coming through thick and fast, so thank you. But Here's a little funny one. Paul from Epping says, Hey, Jack, any chance of challenging yourself and supporting Carlton in a game against Collingwood?
Not a hope in hell.
Well, I think you just contradicted yourself.
No, I didn't.
I think you did.
No,
can I ask you a question?
Because we said if you're going to do it, don't put yourself in danger. You go and explain to my family that I'm going to do that. There's danger around that. I'm sorry, not happening.
Pussy. This from
hold steady
from?
On my beliefs.
Pez in Heatherton says, "Hi guys, Carol Dweck, Dweck. Carol Dweck's work on growth mindset is great too."
I haven't read that.
Thanks, Pez. Also, I'm going to recommend one that you may or may not have read. Exactly, we can change our brains. Neuroplasticity is amazing. It's coming through thick and fast. Mm. There's another book. I can't remember the author, and it's a terrible title. It's a dumb title. And it's an ugly cover of a book. But fortunately, I got past those things and read the book. And the book's awesome. It's called It's the Thought That Counts. Okay. It's the Thought That Counts. And it talks about how your psychology directly affects your physiology. And there's quite a lot of there's technical stuff, but there's also technique stuff in there on how to create some change. So we're nearly done and dusted, folks. Professor Mark Fabreo will be back next week. We'll be back on the air at the same time.